From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, January 11th, 2018. And on this day, the Trump administration says it will support work requirements for Medicaid recipients. Governor LePage is pleased. Advocates say it's illegal and a bad idea. And what the end of the Aroostook County potato harvest school break would mean for students and the community. Those stories ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
As we've been hearing, the Trump administration announced today that it is committed to supporting states that want to require Medicaid recipients to work. Maine is one of 10 states that's seeking federal permission to do that. Governor Paul LePage and other Republicans say the policy would help lift people out of poverty. But advocates for Medicaid recipients say implementing a work requirement would not only harm the people Medicaid's intended to help, it would also be illegal. Patty White has more.
The announcement came in the form of a guidance letter issued by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Jack Comart of Maine Equal Justice Partners says it sets the stage to reverse longstanding Medicaid policy.
CMS up until now has taken the position that work requirements are illegal.
Because the core purpose of Medicaid is to provide health care. And Comart says the majority of people who receive Maine Care, the state version of Medicaid, already work. Instituting a requirement, he says, would be to their detriment.
What generally happens is that people who now are subject to all this red tape end up dropping out of the system because it becomes so complicated. We saw that in the SNAP program or the food stamp program in Maine.
In August, Maine applied for a waiver to its Medicaid program that would require able-bodied individuals to work at least 20 hours a week and pay monthly premiums. The state hasn't received official approval, but Governor Paul LePage hailed the Trump administration's announcement that it intends to support work requirements. In a written statement, LePage said that the requirement will, quote, end isolation, build relationships, improve quality of life, and help move our economy forward. State Republican Senator Eric Brakey, also a candidate for U.S. Senate this year, sees the same benefits and says he's pleased that Maine appears to be on the cusp of getting permission to change Medicaid policy.
I think it's going to really help make sure that we're prioritizing our limited welfare resources for Maine's most vulnerable.
But Maine Medical Association President Dr. Charles Padavina says it's a false economy to think that taking away someone's insurance will save money.
One way or another, whether these people have Medicaid or not, you and I will be paying for their health care.
Because when providers see an increase in uncompensated care, those costs are usually passed on to people with insurance. Darcy Shargo of the Maine Primary Care Association, which represents Maine's community health centers, says the kind of care that people who lose coverage receive also wouldn't be as well coordinated. And that's potentially a lot of people.
One of the big health centers in the state, they're looking at between 18,000 and 26,000 patients that could potentially lose coverage if the work requirements went through.
Shargo also notes that this drive towards work requirements that could restrict access to insurance comes after Maine voters approved Medicaid expansion this past fall. Jack Comart of Maine Equal Justice Partners says his group will file suit if Maine's work requirement request is approved. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Federal wildlife officials say the nation's once-threatened population of Canada lynx is in recovery and can be taken off the endangered species list. Fred Bever reports the move follows years of controversy over the species' health in Maine.
State biologist Jen Fashon has been using radio collars and winter tracking surveys to chart Maine's lynx population for more than a decade. She says the tufted-eared, big-pawed cat's numbers are healthier than ever, with more than 1,000 living in the state and spreading.
It's been exciting to watch. The population has actually continued to grow over the last decade, with lynx being very common in northern Maine and now showing up in portions of western and eastern Maine.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says that after a comprehensive national assessment of the species' health, the science shows it's in recovery throughout its habitat in the country's northern tier and should be removed from the strict regime of protection that's provided by the Endangered Species Act. Federal spokeswoman Megan Racy says the lynx's original listing as threatened resulted partly from a lack of protections on federal lands that provide most of the cat's western habitat. Those protections are now in place, she says, but she credited stakeholders in Maine, which has the largest single lynx population of any of the lower 48 states, for their conservation and science efforts around the species.
The growth of that population over the past 20 years is really thanks to the strong collaboration among the state, the Forest Products Council in Maine, the landowners in the state, the tribes there, and the other conservation organizations that have advanced research and secured a future for the species there.
Not everyone is confident that the species' future is secure, though. Daryl DeJoy of the Wildlife Alliance of Maine has been battling federal and state wildlife officials over a policy that's permitted a small number of lynx to be killed in traps set for other fur-bearing animals. DeJoy and other conservation groups lost a court battle on that issue earlier this year, and news that the lynx would lose endangered species protections was another blow.
1,000 or 1,200 animals is not a particularly high bar to set for a high population of a wildlife species. I believe the lynx definitely merits continued protection. I think they really didn't feel they had to take climate change into consideration almost at all.
The recovery assessment is just the first step that leads toward delisting. The federal government will take public comment on the proposed delisting, and if the lynx is in fact delisted, the government will continue to monitor the animal's populations, including in Maine, for another 5 years to ensure the recovery holds. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For generations, high school students in northern Maine have taken a three-week break from classes every fall to harvest potatoes. But the acreage has shrunk over the past 50 years, and technology has reduced the demand for labor, which means far fewer teenagers are working in the fields of Aroostook County. So, in the city of Presque Isle, the school board is looking at a new approach that could end the tradition of October break, and as Robbie Feinberg reports, bring the harvest into the classroom.
We haven't set up to do any...
Farmer Brent Buck walks through a sea of potatoes inside a large storage facility in Mapleton, a few miles outside of Presque Isle. The team at Buck's family farm harvests close to 300 acres of potatoes over 3 weeks every October and stores them all here.
Actually, this is the first year since we built it in 82 that we didn't fill all of our bins.
For decades, though, workers here have included high schoolers, as many as 20 local teenagers, who sorted through rocks, drove trucks, and transported potatoes from the fields during their harvest break. A three-week break for high schoolers that's largely unique to Aroostook County. It's a tough job, but Buck says it teaches students the value of hard work in ways that they can't learn in a classroom.
I've had a lot of kids tell me the first week that they would never do this again when they were done. But almost always come the third week when harvest is starting to wind down, they always come over and will mention, you know, I'd like to be on the list for next year. I'd like a job again.
But with changing demographics and a smaller harvest, Buck now only employs 3 or 4 students a year.
You know, it's transitioned. You know, we have bought more equipment to do some of the jobs because we have determined that, you know, in some aspects, it's harder to find kids that want to work.
And as fewer students take part in the harvest, many schools are now reassessing the value of the break.
Good evening and welcome to the SAB 1 board workshop.
The topic was front and center earlier this week at a school board workshop for SAD 1, the school district for the Presque Isle area. The workshop was designed as a sort of public debate. 5 community members spoke in support of the break and 5 against. The small conference room at the high school was packed with parents and community members. Local farmers were out in full force. Among them, Kim Hempel, who praised the harvest break and what it taught kids.
Self-discipline, responsibility, being punctual are just a few traits that are learned by working harvest.
And potato grower Cole Staples says he believes it's a tradition that must be preserved.
And to take that unique opportunity from these kids, I just I can't imagine taking something like that away.
But educators and community members said the school board needed to face the changing times. According to a survey from the school district, only about 15% of Presque Isle High School students contributed to harvest work during last year's break. And local officials say that the harvest break actually affects students in negative ways. The school year starts in early August, one local recreation official pointed out, so many students miss out on up to 2 weeks of summer programming. And one teacher said that it takes a lot of time to get students back on track after 3 weeks off. And Presque Isle parent Frank Bemis says it's hard to figure out what to do with his children during harvest break.
And we find it to be a struggle to manage the kids on these off-kilter schedules. Things are a little different for that. Trying to do that, we do some more latchkey type stuff where you leave the youngest home, and I've talked to other parents and they have similar issues. You have one kid in high school who might be helping out, and that kid, you're going to leave the younger kid home.
Those issues have prompted other Aroostook towns to end harvest break. In recent years, the towns of Holton and Hodgdon eliminated their breaks, though the schools say they still accommodate students who want to work during the harvest. In Presque Isle, however, it appears that the board may be looking at a different educational model that would incorporate harvest work into the school curriculum. One parent proposed that the district design a cooperative program that would let students get school credit for their work on the farm. Superintendent Brian Carpenter is developing a version of that plan right now to present to the board in February. Meanwhile, back at his farm in Mapleton, Brent Buck says he knows that times do change. But he says he still doesn't want to see the tradition and hard work of harvest break go away.
It's a changed environment, and, you know, I've got a nephew and two nieces that are their elementary or middle school, and my hope is that that same opportunity to, be a part of something is there for them.
SAD1 school board will decide that question over the next few months. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And education reporting on Maine Public Radio is supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.